Welcome to Lit Poetry, the podcast where we go on a journey of discovery, reading, analyzing, and discussing great poetry from around the world. Poetry is worth it because the reading and writing of poetry is a revolutionary act that has the potential to transform both the reader and our world.
The child inside us is an ever-present reality, shaping our responses to the world. Psychologically, perhaps one of life's central quests is the attempt to reconcile ourselves with these younger versions of ourselves, and thus heal the wounds inside, that for many have the ability to cripple them for life. In times of crisis and conflict, of course, all too often we can be triggered by events in our lives, regressing back into childlike states in which we react to a situation using well-rehearsed and rather dysfunctional scripts. In other words, how often have you, yourself, in moments of conflict, found yourself behaving like a teenager or a young child, having been triggered emotionally to protect yourself? In the end, we can all succumb to these powerful childhood scripts that can hold us prisoners and make us feel like we are acting on autopilot. In today's poem by Sylvia Plath, titled Daddy, the poet deeply explores this phenomenon. She explores and examines how influential people in our lives, like our fathers, can impact on our lives in truly remarkable and often debilitating ways. So let's listen to the poem Daddy by Sylvia Plath, which incidentally is one of my absolute favourite poems of all time.
Daddy, you do not do, you do not do any more black shoe in which I have lived like a foot. For 30 years, poor and white, barely daring to breathe or hachew. Daddy, I have had to kill you. You died before I had time, marble heavy, a bag full of God, ghastly statue with one gray toe big as a Frisco seal, and a head in the freakish Atlantic, where it pours bean green over blue in the waters off beautiful Nauset. I used to pray to recover you, ach du, in the German tongue in the Polish town, scraped flat by the roller of wars, wars, wars. But the name of the town is common. My Polack friend says there are a dozen or two. So I never could tell where you put your foot, your root. I never could talk to you. The tongue stuck in my jaw. It's stuck in a barbed wire snare. Eeh, 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 eeh. I could hardly speak. I thought every German was you. And the language obscene, an engine, chuffing me off like a Jew. A Jew to Dachau, Auschwitz, Belsen. I began to talk like a Jew. I think I may well be a Jew. The snows of the Tyrol, the clear beer of Vienna, are not very pure or true. With my gypsy ancestress and my weird luck, and my tarok pack and my tarok pack, I may be a bit of a Jew. I have always been scared of you, with your Luftwaffe, your gobbledygoo, and your neat mustache and your Aryan eye, bright blue. Panzerman, Panzerman, oh you. Not God, but a swastika, so black no sky could squeak through. Every woman adores a fascist, the brute in the face, the brute, brute heart of a brute like you. You stand at the blackboard, Daddy, in the picture I have of you, a cleft in your chin instead of your foot. But no less a devil for that, no, not any less the black man who bit my pretty red heart in two. I was 10 when they buried you. At 20, I tried to die and get back, back, back to you. I thought even the bones would do. But they pulled me out of the sack and they stuck me together with glue. And then I knew what to do. I made a model of you, a man in black with a Mein Kampf look and a love of the rack and the screw, and I said, I do, I do. So, Daddy, I'm finally through. The black telephone's off at the root, the voices just can't worm through. If I've killed one man, I've killed two. The vampire who said he was you and drank my blood for a year. 7 years, if you want to know. Daddy, you can lie back now. There's a stake in your fat black heart, and the villagers never liked you. They are dancing and stamping on you. They always knew it was you. Daddy, Daddy, you bastard, I'm through.
Instead of starting as I usually do with the historical context, I want to jump straight into the themes, starting with gender and oppression. I've covered elements of Plath's life in previous episodes. In the poem, the speaker has harboured admiration for her father since childhood, but eventually realises that his legacy is marked by violence and oppression. Throughout the poem, she endeavours to emancipate herself from his influence. However, the poem transcends the confines of this specific father-daughter relationship. Instead, the speaker's connection to her father's memory serves as a metaphor for the broader power imbalance prevalent in a patriarchal society. In such a societal structure where men predominantly occupy positions of political, social, and moral authority, the poem suggests that women endure repressive regulations and violence orchestrated by men. This oppressive environment curtails women's autonomy, self-expression, and freedom. The poem's engagement with patriarchy becomes evident from its title. By choosing daddy instead of father or dad, Plath establishes a dynamic where a male figure is exalted, positioned prominently at the poem's outset. Simultaneously, the female speaker is rendered childlike. Despite being an adult, she addresses her father using the vocabulary of a child and attempts communication with him through the rhythmic patterns of a nursery rhyme. The speaker proceeds to depict the overbearing influence of her father's memory, likening herself to a foot confined within a black shoe for 3 decades, paralyzed with fear, unable to breathe. Essentially, she feels suffocated by her father's presence, described as an immense statue, as weighty as marble or a bag full of God. These descriptions underscore the profound impact and extent of the speaker's father, whose memory continues to oppress her long after his demise. This not only underscores his personal influence on her, but also symbolizes the broader figurative weight of oppression experienced by women in a world dominated by men. As a result of the prevailing oppression, the speaker has experienced a profound inability to engage with, let alone confront, her father throughout her existence. Over the span of 30 years, she has not only been reluctant to even breathe, but also portrays her tongue as being ensnared in a barbed wire snare, emphasizing the forceful nature of her father's control, which prevents her from expressing herself. Consequently, the poem underscores the deprivation of communication as a distinct consequence of the oppression faced by the speaker. In the poem, the speaker explicitly equates her father with the Nazis and starts to associate herself with the Jewish people, revealing her profound sense of powerlessness in the face of her father's authority. The Nazis, being fascists characterized by authoritarianism and the ruthless suppression of dissent, serve as a controversial comparison intended to show the harshness of her father's presence, to which the speaker implies she was too coward to resist. In fact, the speaker goes to the extreme by making a seemingly casual remark that every woman adores a fascist. This statement not only highlights the imbalance of power between men and women, but also indicates the normalization of violence against women. It suggests that societal violence against women is so ingrained and accepted that women may be perceived as actually adoring their oppressors. Essentially, the poem emphasises how this oppression is so pervasive and ingrained in society that victims may struggle to recognise it, let alone challenge it. In the pursuit of this goal, the speaker constructs a representation of her father and weds this figure. The husband is characterised by a Mein Kampf look and a penchant for the rack and the screw, imagery that shows his violence and oppressive tendencies. This husband transforms into a vampire, metaphorically extracting the speaker's blood for 7 years, symbolising how marriage, with its patriarchal system, deprives a woman of her own autonomy. Transitioning from her father to another man has not liberated the speaker, as she remains ensconced in a stifling world where she is treated as subordinate to the men in her life. Of course, in her real life, Plath suffered in her relationship to the famous older poet, Ted Hughes, who could be seen as having qualities reminiscent of her own father. The speaker can metaphorically pierce her father's heart only by acknowledging the patriarchal violence and oppression inherent in her marriage and declaring that she is finally through. She signifies not only her liberation from the oppressive marital relationship, but also her emancipation from the gendered dynamic ingrained by her father. The poem contends that the key to combating patriarchal oppression lies in recognizing and revealing its various ever-changing manifestations. Welcome back. The next theme I want to discuss is that of abuse of power, especially through myth-making. Daddy explores the elevation and the romanticism that's often associated with authority figures, examining both the speaker's personal connection with her father and the broader historical context of the Holocaust. To perceive her father accurately, the speaker must dismantle the godlike image she has constructed of him. Similarly, the poem illustrates the vulnerability of Nazi authority, hinging on the belief in propaganda that idealized it. The underlying message is that individuals succumb to authoritarian power when they perceive themselves as powerless and view the authority as absolute. The dynamic shifts when these illusions are exposed and punctured. After losing her father to illness when she was young, the speaker becomes fixated on him, a fixation that persists into her adulthood. The speaker's father passed away before she could truly see him for who he was, leaving her trapped in a childlike perception of him as godlike. As time passes, the memory of her father appears to gain even more oppressive influence, leading the speaker to recognise the need to dismantle the godlike image she has held onto in order to attain freedom. Consequently, she confesses to her father that she has had to metaphorically kill him, or, more accurately, the idealised version of him that has kept her captivated. Nevertheless, the task is challenging. The speaker grapples with the challenge of perceiving her father distinctly, expressing, "I could never tell where you put your foot, your root." This imagery not only signifies the father's elusive identity in the speaker's perception, but also conveys the speaker's perception of his omnipresence, his godlike ability to be present everywhere simultaneously. "I thought every German was you." The difficulty of pinpointing the man, coupled with being surrounded by the myth of him, reflects the speaker's growing realization that a clear understanding would strip him of the power he holds over her. Continuing, the speaker draws a parallel between her relationship with her father and the relationship between Jewish people and the Nazis during the Holocaust. The analogy not only sheds light on her personal struggle, but also underscores how power and authority are susceptible to people's belief in them. The speaker expresses her fear of her father's Luftwaffe and gobbledygook, the tangible threat posed by the German Air Force and the nonsensical mythology propagated by the propaganda system. The concern also extends to her father's Aryan eye, bright blue, where the singular use of the word eye implies a vigilant, authoritative presence rather than a literal pair of eyes. Similarly, during World War II, the pervasive fear of drawing Nazi attention led people to behave as if constantly under scrutiny, reinforcing the control exerted by the Nazis. The speaker acknowledges the fallacy of her father's power, distinguishing him as not God, an actual deity, but rather a swastika, an empty symbol. By invoking the symbol of the Nazi regime, she emphasizes that for a symbol of authority to be effective, it must be so black no sky can squeak through, in essence. It must block out all light, hope, and truth. The speaker suggests that once one starts to see through the illusion to the truth behind it, the symbol loses its power. Therefore, it is only when the speaker manages to truly perceive her father, dispelling the illusion of his godlike authority, that she liberates herself from his influence. The speaker describes a picture of her father where he appears to be teaching a class at a blackboard, an image that implies his asserted authority. However, the speaker finally realizes that he is no less a devil, even though the picture obscures his true nature. The poem concludes with the speaker boldly declaring her freedom, stating, "Daddy, Daddy, you bastard, I'm through." An assertion she can confidently make because she no longer subscribes to the myth surrounding him. So that's it for another episode. We'll be back next week with a poem by Walt Whitman. I hope you enjoyed the discussion of the poem Daddy. We'll finish by listening one last time to the poem. I'll see you next week.
Daddy. You do not do any more black shoe in which I have lived like a foot for 30 years, poor and white, barely daring to breathe or hachew. Daddy, I have had to kill you. You died before I had time, marble heavy, a bag full of God, ghastly statue with one gray toe big as a Frisco seal, and a head in the freakish Atlantic, where it pours bean green over blue in the waters off beautiful Nauset. I used to pray to recover you, ach du, in the German tongue in the Polish town, scraped flat by the roller of wars, wars, wars. But the name of the town is common. My Polack friend says there are a dozen or two. So I never could tell where you put your foot, your root. I never could talk to you. The tongue stuck in my jaw. It stuck in a barbed wire snare. Eeh, 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 eeh. I could hardly speak. I thought every German was you. And the language obscene, an engine, chuffing me off like a Jew. A Jew to Dachau, Auschwitz, Belsen. I began to talk like a Jew. I think I may well be a Jew. The snows of the Tyrol, the clear beer of Vienna, are not very pure or true. With my gypsy ancestress and my weird luck, and my tarok pack and my tarok pack, I may be a bit of a Jew. I have always been scared of you, with your Luftwaffe, your gobbledygoo, and your neat mustache and your Aryan eye, bright blue. Panzerman. Panzerman, oh you, not God but a swastika, so black no sky could squeak through. Every woman adores a fascist, the boot in the face, the brute, brute heart of a brute like you. You stand at the blackboard, Daddy, in the picture I have of you, a cleft in your chin instead of your foot. But no less a devil for that, no, not any less the black man who bit my pretty red heart in two. I was 10 when they buried you. At 20 I tried to die and get back, back, back to you. I thought even the bones would do. But they pulled me out of the sack and they stuck me together with glue. And then I knew what to do. I made a model of you, a man in black with a Mein Kampf look and a love of the rack and the screw, and I said, I do, I do. So, Daddy, I'm finally through. The black telephone's off at the root, the voices just can't worm through. If I've killed one man, I've killed two. The vampire who said he was you and drank my blood for a year. 7 years, if you want to know. Daddy, you can lie back now. There's a stake in your fat black heart, and the villagers never liked you. They are dancing and stamping on you. They always knew it was you. Daddy, Daddy, you bastard, I'm through.
You've been listening to the Lit Poetry Podcast, presented by James Laidler. For more podcasts, poetry videos, and other useful resources, visit our website at www.litpoetry.com. Thanks for listening.